Okay, now we can start.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
If you build it, they will come. Joel, seen that movie? He's in the movie, Joe.
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Jordan Malley. Jordan, great to see you. Through our 670 scores scope. Yep.
Where is he?
And it's right over there, Bill.
Did Matt Peck get a signed copy of that book?
No, Matt Peck, he didn't know. No. I'll talk to D. Rose. Yeah, guys. Matt, well, you will be getting your book soon.
Kick back and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
And so all I was saying on this podcast, the Locked On Bulls podcast.
Locked On Bulls starts now.
The Locked On Bulls podcast.
You can just see the vibe.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Jordan Malley. Along with me is Matt Peck. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Drop all your texts, all your voicemails, anything you got for us, 331-979-1369. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. $10 off your first box or your first order at Built Bar using the promo code LOCKEDON. That's $10 off your first order at BuiltBar.com. Matt, welcome back. Happy Thursday to you. Push mailbag to Thursday and have an exciting interview for tomorrow. So very, very excited for our listeners to hear these two episodes. Got a lot of text messages, a lot of voicemails to get into. But first, how are you?
What's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? Doing well. Another week. Another week of quarantine. Obviously, as the weather gets nicer, it's going to be hard for Chicagoans because when spring finally hits, all of us want to be flocking outside. And man, it's tough. I almost would like rather we get more of these like cold, nasty, rainy days so you don't feel as bad about being inside. But the good news is we still have plenty of Bulls and NBA stuff to talk about. You know, we got Bulls Pacers 98 Conference Finals Game 7 on deck tonight on the NBC Sports Chicago last chapter series that they're running, the final chapter series. And then, you know, now we're only a few days removed from two more episodes of The Last Dance. So there's, you know, there's some good and some bad.
One thing I won't be watching is that awful golf tournament that they're holding with Tom Brady and Peyton Manning and Phil Mickelson and fucking Tiger Woods. I think it's going on right now today, but yeah, and no thanks on that. So you're right. As quarantine goes on, as the night weather gets nicer. Matt, I was going to work yesterday, and it was beautiful in the city yesterday. It was probably about 60 degrees, not a cloud in the sky. There was way too many people in the city yesterday. Way too many people.
Oh, yeah.
And way too many people not wearing masks either. I know Illinois has made it kind of a mandate now that anytime you go into any place in Illinois, you have to wear a mask. And there's a lot of signs, too. Like, I popped into a gas station right before I got into the city, and there was two massive signs that said, if you're not wearing a mask, you're not allowed inside. And I was in another gas station a couple days ago, and somebody got kicked out because he wasn't wearing anything over his face. So people are taking it serious here in Illinois.
As well they should. I mean, I saw a lot of people out and about yesterday. I mean, walking dogs, riding bikes, going for walks, and you know, obviously everybody's starting to get stir crazy. Been stir crazy for a while, and it obviously is getting harder the longer in this lockdown mode. But you know, we gotta do our part.
Gotta do it. So even as hard as it is, as difficult as it is, and like you said, I almost am wishing for like a heavier rain filled April and May. Well, we got a heavy filled rain April, but hopefully May is the same way, just so it doesn't make us feel as bad that we're spending most of our time inside. But before we get to the text and voicemails, Matt, I know you noticed on Twitter I had acquired an absolute steal of a picture the other day, and I don't know if everybody follows me on Twitter or not, but Matt, this guy in Florida, I do this thing where I go on eBay when I'm bored and I'll dig through, try to find gems of autographs, and people are undervaluing their autographs or just trying to get rid of stuff. And this is a perfect time to do that. And sure enough, I found a massive picture of Joakim Noah autographed. It was listed for $8.99.
And it's the dunk on Pierce, right?
Yes,
if I looked at that picture correctly. Yeah, it's game 6, triple OT dunk on Pierce.
Which I was like, there's no way. I was like, this guy's got it listed for $8.99. I'm like, I don't know if this is real. So I messaged him and he's like, yeah, I've got certification. I own a card shop down here in Florida. And this was a long time ago when Joe was down here, maybe 5-6 years ago, signing autographs for us. And he's like, I haven't gotten rid of all of them yet. And I'm like, amazing. So best $20 I have ever spent. And it's sitting right next to me on my desk now. So it was a great acquisition. Dude. And that picture too is perfect.
It's amazing. It's like, I mean, that's one of the most iconic moments in Bulls history. Like, you know, obviously the dynasty years had plenty of those. And actually today is the anniversary of MJ's shot on Elo in game 5. But as far as like outside the dynasty, most iconic moments in the franchise's history, like I put that number one. I know, you know, some people would say like, you know, D Rose's shot in game 3 in 2015. And I wouldn't necessarily argue that, but like, That Joakim Noah dunk, man, that is like primo Chicago Bulls history. So the fact that you got a fucking freeze frame of that autographed for that cheap, I'm green with envy.
I'm telling people, eBay offer up these aftermarket sites, man. People just giving stuff away, you know. Somebody else's trash is somebody else's gold, and certainly found that the other day. So I
if
know I was getting
anybody
hit up-
would call that picture trash, then. they're dead, they are a soulless human being.
So yeah, I was getting hit up left and right, direct messages from people and saying like, well, how the hell did you find that, where did you get that? And I'm like, guys, just do a little scouring on eBay and you'll find some really, really great gems there. But be careful, make sure anything you buy there is authenticated too, because there's also a lot of scammers out there. So but I am very, very happy to acquire this. And like you said, I think that's my next project, is try to find a still photo of that shot from game 3 in 2015, because that's still one of my favorite moments of all time. So without further ado, let's just get right to our text and voicemails. Again, you can hit us up at 331-979-1369. Your text messages, your voicemails, anything you got for us, drop it there. On Twitter as well, at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck. Let's get into our first voicemail. This is one that leaked over from last week, Matt, that we didn't really get a chance to get into. But from the 630, it's a little long. Let's take a listen to it.
What's up, Matt? What's up, Jordan? Hope you guys are doing well. So I'm listening to a podcast as usual, man. Trying to catch up here. But anyways, something that it kind of occurred to me while you guys were talking on your podcast. Ever since we drafted Lowry, we have compared him over and over and over and over and over again. Fucking Dirk Nowitzki. So let's take a look at Lowry's first 3 years in the NBA, and take a look at Dirk's. So Dirk started off with a points per game at, I don't know, like about 12 or something like that. Popped up to about 18 his sophomore year, and was kind of already playing like Dirk Nowitzki his third year, at averaging around 23 points per game. Now, if you look at Dirk's 3-point percentage range, he was actually already averaging, not already averaging, but he at some point in his career had a trajectory of about 0.4%, 0.40%, or 40%, I should say, for his 3-point. Lowry hasn't even hit 0.37 in his 3 years here as a Bull. I'm starting to wonder if we are hoping Lowry will be the next Dirk, but in reality, all he's ever going to be is, well, I hate to say it, and I hate to compare it to Nikola Mirotic, but just another fucking player from Europe that, you know, that doesn't fucking, he doesn't have it in him. I don't think, you know, we've compared Lowry over and over and over again to Dirk, and maybe, you know, his play style will eventually become, you know, like Dirk, and he will become like Dirk. I just don't see it. I'm at the point where, you know, this guy's young. We just got Karsanovas. Let's get Lowry the fuck out of here. Let's trade him up and put somebody else better around Zach, and somebody that maybe can contribute, or maybe that's somebody that's young that might be able to contribute in the future. Because I'm not seeing the future here with Lowry. I really am not. I think that I watching his game, he's weak in the post. In his third year, I haven't seen any post-up moves. Besides anybody nobody on the Bulls team has any good post-up moves. Besides maybe Wendell, and even his moves are pretty weak. And that's not his fault because he's kind of an undersized center. I'm just out on Lowry at this point. I just want to get you guys' thoughts on that.
So Matt, brought up I guess some baseline points about being critical of Lowry Markkanen. I don't know if I take it as far as the Dirk comparison. I felt like that was massive right when the Bulls drafted him and even throughout the first year or so. But I think those comparisons have tamed completely, if not just completely eliminated. What do you think about Lowry Markkanen's projection after 3 years? And let's granted, too, that the only healthy, real healthy season we saw out of Markkanen was his rookie year. But with change now, people that we have in the front office, you think Kardasovas and Eversley and whoever else they build this team and this group around can help bring Lowry back to what the Bulls originally thought he was going to be when they drafted him?
I mean, first off, to our caller saying everybody, you know, keeps comparing Lowry to Dirk constantly, I would disagree with that. I know that that's something that people have tried to use as a parallel, certainly at least if you're talking about Lowry's ceiling, not like a player comp, like, oh, he's going to be the next Dirk. And some people make that comparison because it's a lazy, you know, comparison of 7-footer Euro guys who can shoot. I would agree with the caller's thoughts on Lowry not having much of a post game to speak of, but that's never really been his calling card, and that never projected to be his calling card, even when we watched him play college ball at Arizona. He's not a post-up player. So if that's what you were looking for, I think you were looking in the wrong places. Obviously, as you said, the injuries have really hurt Lowry's development. And as we have all wondered and have now been confirmed from new GM Mark Eversley, the player development system of the Chicago Bulls has not done him any favors over the last few years, so much so that in this third season, and yes, maybe we've been wondering if he was playing hurt for a stretch and also lost some of the season because of an injury, but Lowry, even if healthy and when healthy this season, looked like a player who was getting worse, not better. And the conversation's always been about, is that Lowry's fault? Is it the team's fault? Or is it some combination of the two? And I think you and I both believe it's a combination of the two. But because, you know, you want to compare them, if you look at their per 36 minutes, their rookie years, and then their third years, respectively, because Lowry played more than Dirk when they were rookies, per 36, Lowry was better than Dirk their rookie years. Lowry was 18.5 points. Dirk was 14.5. Lowry shot 36% from downtown his rookie year. Dirk shot 20% from downtown his rookie year. Lowry was better at the free throw line. He had 9.1 rebounds per 36 as opposed to Dirk's 6.1. Assists, steals, and blocks all fairly similar. And then you go to year three, and that's where the bad news comes, because in year three per 36, Lowry actually is down from his rookie year to just 17.8 points per game, and Dirk had jumped up to 20.6 points per 36. Lowry's rebounds went down. Dirk's jumped up to 8.7. Three-point percentage, Lowry's is down from 36 and change to 34.4. Dirk's went from 20% to 38.7%. So clearly, those are two lines going in opposite directions. Lowry was better than Dirk their respective rookie years. In their respective third years, Dirk was by far better than Lowry and on an upward trend, and Lowry is on a downward trend. But the caller saying, let's just get rid of Lowry. I'm sorry, I still don't think that that is a wise move. One, his trade value is an all-time low right now because of the terrible season he just had. And two, we're exasperated talking about how the Bulls put no work into developing this kid. So let's see if they can develop this kid before they sell him.
I think a point lost in this, too, is the fact that who Dirk, who Nico even, played with the first 3 years of their career is far different from who Lauri Markkanen has had to play with or who's coached him the first 3 years of his career. Lauri Markkanen's had two head coaches. Nico Mirotic had two head coaches in his first three seasons with the Bulls. I'm looking at their stats right now, Matt. Dallas even. I'm going back to Dirk's first 3 years. In Dirk's third year, the Mavericks won 53 games and they lost in the Western Conference semis. The Bulls had two playoff appearances in Nico's first 3 years as a Bull. So there was a level of expectation for those two players and the players that they were playing around with a lot better than what Lauri Markkanen's playing with too. So I kind of want to factor that in as well in terms of overall projection, how player development is happening, and not to lay the burden, I guess, all on Lauri Markkanen, because a lot of these guys' development is helped with players that they're surrounded by. I get your point on the Dirk stuff. I don't know if I'd go as far as comparing Lauri to Nico Mirotic. I mean, Nico and Lowry's numbers are almost identical. Nico had a little bit better of a shooting percentage through his first three seasons. Dirk and Lauri are pretty similar if you combine the first three seasons together, but we know Dirk took off after year three, or right at year three and beyond. His stats just spiked completely. I don't know if we're going to see that from Lauri or not, but you're right. The thing with the Bulls, and they've said it multiple times, and Lauri has even said it multiple times over the last couple of months, stop making me just sit at the three-point line and act like I'm just a three-point shooter, because he's not that. I mean, I hate to do this, and we keep beating this drum over and over again, Matt, but going back last year to February, Lauri Markkanen wasn't just shooting threes. He was bringing the ball up. He was a main ball handler, and I know they tried to do this multi-ball handler system that didn't really work out for them, but allowing Lauri Markkanen to be more aggressive the way he was for 6 weeks last season, where did that go, and how do we get that back? I think that's the most important thing. If you're trying to resurrect Lauri Markkanen back to what we had him before, find out whatever he was doing in those 6 weeks that created this burn and this fire from him, and see if you can get that back. Because right now, I feel like it's sort of the way that we talked about Nico. Why is Nico just sitting in the corner shooting threes, not rebounding, not doing anything else that he was brought here to do? And then finally, when Nico gets the opportunity to do that right before we ship him off, he's one of the best scorers in the league for 6 weeks. So I think it's also a Bulls mentality problem with their bigs. They see a big that can shoot threes and just get so enamored with that they box a guy in like that. And I don't know, maybe that's part of the reason Lauri Markkanen hasn't been so good the last couple of years too.
And and I think some of it is also just about expectation.
True.
You know, as I pointed out, Lauri was way better as a rookie than Dirk was. Like, way better. And Bulls fans saw a guy who was part of a kickstart, you know, a rebuild, and he was what we got excited about first because Zach was rehabbing his ACL, you know, but for the first two-thirds of that season when, you know, after the Bulls made that trade, and we were like, you know, didn't know a whole lot about Lauri, you know, watched some of his tape from Zona, and we're like, oh, this kid, he could play, he could shoot a little bit, and we loved what we saw from him his rookie year and thought, hey, maybe we got a steal here, even at seven. Like, if you redrafted that draft, that season, after that rookie season, you know, where, like, Lauri makes the all-rookie team, people are saying, man, maybe Lauri could have gone, should have gone third, fourth, instead of seventh. And now, fast forward to today, it's not really feeling like that anymore. But again, like, stop with the Dirk comparison. Like, nobody's doing that. You know, our caller is saying stop with the Dirk comparison. I don't think anybody who's looking at this realistically thought that. Dirk is a Hall of Fame player, arguably the best player to ever come to the NBA from Europe. And anyone who was looking at Lauri through rose-colored glasses thinking that was a ceiling was kidding themselves. What were the odds of Lauri actually turning into, quote-unquote, the next Dirk? Because those odds were slim, because Dirk is a first ballot Hall of Famer. And I know maybe part of it is the fan base wanting to believe that we have that next superstar who's going to bring the team back to relevance. And wouldn't it be great if this kid who had a solid rookie season turned out to be that guy? But I'm sorry. Right now, it doesn't look like it.
Come on, man.
I don't think anybody's called him Baby Dirk since like the first 3 months he's been on the team, and even that was by far a stretch, but you're right. It all goes back to expectation, like you said. And I think that's the same for Zach LaVine. And same thing with Coby White and same thing with Wendell Carter Jr., the same way we talked about those guys the last couple of years. And I know you and I always kept saying, like, temper your expectations. Like, there might be a stretch at two or three weeks where Lowry and Zach or Coby White looks amazing and it's everything we thought it was going to be, but there's going to be downhills too. The last thing I want to say about this, and we can move on after this, Matt, is the idea of trading Lowry right now seems like a bad idea. Like, if you're going to deal Lowry Markkanen, okay, take it from the fact that maybe the Bulls don't want to pay him or are unsure about paying him 2 years from now and having to think about unloading a big contract on him. You know, we're talking like 4 years, 5 years, 80 to 100 million. That's what Lowry Markkanen's going to go for if he has a good year this year. So maybe you don't want to pay him. But right now, as it stands today, if you try to trade Lowry Markkanen, you're going to be trading him at his lowest value he's been at since he got drafted. So to me, that doesn't seem like a very ideal situation. And it's not like Lowry Markkanen's broken either. Let's not forget the injuries he had too. So I don't know if I'm completely on board with shipping him out yet. If you're talking to me about picking between Coby White, Wendell Carter Jr. or Lowry, then we can have more of a conversation. But my question would be, what are you getting back for him? And I'm not just dealing him because he had a bad year and a half and he's been injured and he's not the guy that we thought he was going to be right away. So I want value back in return if we're dealing him.
Yeah. And, you know, like if they were to trade him, the team that they that would be wanting to acquire Lowry would obviously get his bird rights. But, you know, bringing in a player coming off a down year who's got 1 year left on their rookie deal, who's going to be looking for a fresh contract, I don't, you know, not a lot of teams are going to be shedding a lot of, you know, quality assets to get a player like that right now.
It's going to be more interesting, too, to hear the conversations once they're allowed to go back and start talking to some of these players one-on-one and in person. I'm going to be intrigued about the conversations Wendell Carter Jr. is going to have with the front office about really wanting to change positions. And if that is something that is forefront and number one on his priority list, because it seems like he was very adamant about that at the end of the season. And, you know, the stories that kept coming out were Carter's inability to play center, but he just doesn't feel like that he's comfortable there. And I also, too, have a worry about whether he's big enough, durable enough to play a modern NBA center and not deal with foul trouble, not deal with injuries the way we've seen it over the last 2 years. But that's a different conversation for a different day. Thanks for the call, though. I think that more the more we get into the draft and maybe free agency and we get more talking about this team and how they're going to assemble things in the offseason, the more we're going to have more conversations about Lowry and what they may decide to do in year four. Before we get to the next voicemail, Matt, let's I want to talk to you guys about Built Bar. Built Bar is the official sponsor of the Locked On Podcast Network and Locked On Bulls all month long here in the month of May. You can use the promo code at builtbar.com. The promo code is Locked On. You'll get $10 off your first order. Built Bar is something we've been talking about for the last couple of days, Matt, and the protein bars that these guys have created is something unique and something that I've never had before. And somebody last year, I was at the heaviest I ever was, Matt. I was at 256. For somebody who's 5'11", 256, it's not great for your health. So one of the things that I decided to do was go on the keto diet, and it worked. I was on it for 8 months, and I lost damn near 50 pounds. I was down to 208 at my lightest, and it was all thanks to cutting out carbs, cutting out bad food. But there was one thing that I absolutely hated, and I've talked to you guys about it before. I hated eating breakfast, but I needed to kickstart my day with something, get the metabolism going. And Built Bar, I think, has come up with the greatest solution. The bars are amazing in taste, amazing in flavor. They have 16 great flavors, 8 chocolate nut flavors, and 8 chocolate nut free flavors. The bars are covered in 100% chocolate, and they're soft and easy to chew. They're not like a regular protein bar where you're getting like powder in your mouth or it's impossible to bite off a piece. These are literally like a candy bar. They're great for the healthy, conscious guy or girl in your life. Lose and maintain weight while you're indulging in a delicious treat. They're low calorie, low sugar, high protein, and high fiber. This is what I'm talking about, guys. I would only let myself have about 20 to 25 net carbs a day while I was on this diet. One bar. Say you're going with the peanut butter brownie, 20 grams of protein, 170 calories, 3 grams of sugar, and only 3 grams of net carbs. That is huge. How about another one? Mint brownie, 15 grams of protein, 110 calories, 4 grams of sugar, and only 5 grams of net carbs. So you can get your chocolate fix and not feel bad about cheating on your diet. So go to BuiltBar.com, use promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get $10 off your first order. That's BuiltBar.com. Use promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off. You decide to order from Built Bar, tweet at us, and we will retweet you, give you guys a shout out as well. And I'm telling you guys, these are incredible. So if you're on a diet right now, you're trying to keep that quarantine weight off, these are a fantastic pick-me-up and a fantastic snack to in between meals. So go again to BuiltBar.com, promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off your first order.
Jordan, before our words for Built Bar, you were talking about getting more insight into this roster and what changes will happen after the draft and free agency, and also talking about Lowry. This text seems pretty relevant. This comes to us from Kenny in Atlanta. Hey guys, a few months ago, Bleacher Report article came out talking about Denny Avdija, the 19-year-old 6'9 small forward from Israel. Watching his highlights, I really like what I'm seeing. He almost reminds me of what Lowry was supposed to be this season, but obviously in a smaller body. He gets rebounds, pushes in transition, he can shoot, but also likes to slash or get into the post. He's probably a better passer and defender than Lowry, but I see a lot of similarities in their games. I've been a LaMelo fan for years, but I can see why people might not think he may not pan out. To me, Denny Avdija is a good second choice for the Bulls, and one that would most likely be in our range without getting lucky in the lottery. He could be a secondary playmaker in the offense who's willing to work on defense and make the right pass to set up his teammates. I kind of want to know what you guys think about him if you had a chance to check out any of his game tape. P.S. Really appreciate the content during the quarantine. Without this podcast and the Bulls finally making moves for the future to keep it going, I don't know where I'd be. Appreciate you checking in, Kenny, and thanks for the question. Glad you're enjoying the podcast. So obviously, Jordan, we haven't talked about Denny yet, but he's been getting a lot of attention as we still are kind of wondering if and when and what the NBA draft is going to be. We already know that they've pushed back combine and lottery that would usually be happening about a week from now. I have watched some of this Denny Avdija Kids' tape. There's plenty of it to go check out on YouTube if you're curious. He's been playing for Tel Aviv. I do agree with most of Kenny's breakdown, except for the part where he says Denny can shoot, because that is my big concern with this kid. Obviously, you like his size at the wing, and he does do a lot of great things. He can be a kind of point forward player in today's modern NBA, but go look at his numbers from this past season for Tel Aviv. He shot 27.7% from three, and even more worrying to me, the dude shot just 55% from the free throw line. The free throw line, 55%. That's like Shaq or Dwight Howard. Not good. So that's my big concern with him. I think in a lot of ways what he provides could work. And obviously you know that because of Arturas and all of his connections, the Bulls will be looking at him for what they will probably be doing, which is picking seventh. I mean, I think that's foregone conclusion at this point. But I think he will be in that range. He's definitely, I would say I'd be shocked if he falls outside the top 10. He might even go top five because it's kind of a thin draft class. And he is that what if, exciting Euro prospect. The Bulls obviously could look to add a wing right now. We're not really sold and not that high on Hutch, who clearly can't even stay on the court. And Otto is a lame duck veteran coming into this 2021 season. So I think I hope the Bulls do their due diligence by scouting him heavily. The one concern to me is his shooting.
His dad was a really good professional player too. His father's name is Zufar. I'm pretty sure how you pronounce his last name, I may be wrong on this, is Avdija. And I may be wrong on that pronunciation. I have it written down as Avdija, but again, I am probably the last person you want to be asking about pronunciations. I'm somebody who fucks it up every time. So, but I got, Matt, this was one of the 10 players I started right before quarantine hit. I was starting to do draft profiles, and this was one of the players that I had done some in-depth research on just across the board. And this is a few weeks ago. So the rankings might have changed, but at the time that I put this list together, ESPN had him number 5 on their top 100. The Athletic had him number 3. CBS Sports had him number 6. Bleacher Report had him number 5. NBA DraftNet had him number 8. And Tankathon had him number 9. I'm sure his rankings have been adjusted as people start to talk about them more. But yeah, you were talking about his free throw percentage, and that was one thing that stuck out to me, and I kind of highlighted in that red. In the EuroLeague, he shot 57.1% from the free throw line, and in the IBSL, he shot 51.9% from the free throw line on about 3 attempts a game. But his three-point shooting was great in the IBSL. He shot 38% from there. EuroLeague wasn't all that great. Again, though, if you look at his EuroLeague stats, he only played about 15 minutes a game, so the games that he did get in were actually really impressive. Two of his top performances I wrote down, Matt, were one against France and one against Spain back in the summer of 2019, so about a year ago. He scored 26 points, had 11 rebounds and assists, 5 steals and 3 blocks against France. And then the day after, he came back and scored 23 points, 5 rebounds, 7 assists, a steal, and 3 blocks against Spain. So he was putting up numbers left and right. So I'm with you. I like this kid a lot. I think he's athletic. I think he's the perfect wing that the Bulls would need. And it seems like there's a lot of hype around him, too. He was the 2019 NBA All-Star Basketball Without Borders MVP. In 2018, he was named MVP of that same one. That's that invite from everybody around the world coming in here. It was basically the NBA Combine and the Summer League for Euro players. One of the quotes that I pulled too on him said, this is from the Steppen. The Steppen does a great job on draft stuff. It says, incredibly hard worker, gets to the gym early, puts up shots after games, extremely competitive. A lot of that taken from his father, who played in Yugoslavia, Israel, and Serbia. So a lot to like about him. And I'm sure Karnašovas, with his background on Euro players as well, has done his due diligence as well.
Yeah. And, you know, he's one of a handful of wings that could be lottery picks in this upcoming draft class. And I know, you know, the Bulls usually, at least in the Paxton regime, have never really drafted for need. Unless maybe you want to say Kobe White this past year, because they still were searching for their answer at point guard, but he was more of a combo guard and shooting guard in college. So I still think even that doesn't qualify. But right now, I mean, we all knew that that would be an issue if Otto got hurt. And then Otto got hurt, and it was an issue. The Bulls had no answers at the wing position. And it's like, in a draft class that's this weak, maybe drafting for position in need is not the worst idea, because it's like you would be passing up on some amazing talent just because they don't play a position that you currently have a need for. And guess what? This rebuild 3 years in doesn't appear to be working. And they're going to evaluate all this talent. So, like, you might essentially be starting from scratch. So the whole drafting for need thing might go completely out the window if they just decide to flip most of this roster. But there are other names that I like that kid Devin Vassell from Florida State. Really solid, strong shooter. Definitely like a prototypical 3-and-D kind of guy in today's NBA. I would like to see the Bulls take a close look at him. And then, you know, a couple other ones, that kid from Auburn, Isaac Okoro, kind of like he's already getting like some Jimmy Butler comps, like not a great scorer or shooter, but certainly very athletic and a versatile defender and a guy who can do a lot of things for you in transition. And then if you were looking at maybe kind of like a small ball wing, he's most like, I see him as a shooting guard in the NBA because I still like bigger shooting guards and even bigger wings. But Anthony Edwards from Georgia. But, you know, that's a guy who's probably going to be off the board top 3 for sure.
Yeah, and even a reach, too. I've seen James Wiseman as like a 9 or 10, which if the Bulls, if any indication over the last couple of years, the Bulls are probably picking 7th again, unless they trade up. So RJ Hampton would be another one that I would take a deep look at. And I feel like whoever goes overseas and plays 1 year, even if they were a top recruit, always gets dropped down in the draft board, unless you're LaMelo Ball, which LaMelo Ball is probably going top 3, if not number 1, but that still remains to be seen. But I'm with you, man. RJ Hampton's a good pick. I mean, Tyrese Halbert, too. I know we make fun of Iowa State connections. We don't need to really worry about that anymore with Gar being launched. But he's getting a lot of recognition, too. And I don't know if the Bulls want to take another guard or not, but I would be looking more towards the wings. And unfortunately, the wings are far and few between in this draft, at least top level elite type of wings. So thanks for the call, or thanks for the text.
And you know what? If the other name I'll throw out is Sadiq Bey from Nova, good size at the wing, shot 45% from downtown this past season. And then, you know, he would obviously be like welcomed in right away by our already super popular Nova player on the Bulls, Ryan Arcidiacono.
The last thing I'll go back to Denny about is he's a winner. I don't know if people care about that or not, but I kind of do. Ooh. Matt, I care about if you go throughout your career, especially early, and you've had success, there's something about knowing how to win and having previous winning experience that I think brings a lot of different type of hunger to a player coming into the NBA than maybe somebody who just dominated, dropped 30 points, but was on a terrible team.
I don't care if he's a winner, Jordan. I care about whether or not he is a baller or a hooper. Is he a baller? Is he a hooper? Does he have a history of playing football? These are the questions we need to be asking.
He's a baller.
Jim Boylan is still this team's head coach.
He's not nut.
That is true. All right, let's get to our next voicemail here.
Hey, Matt. Hey, Jordan. First of all, I got to say I love your show. You guys really helped me get some mental relief during this crazy time. And I will say, though, it's been kind of relieving not to have to watch the Bulls lose game after game. But anyways, my question for you guys is, how do you feel that the current Chicago Bulls organization will be affected by this Last Dance documentary? Do you think these younger players are going to see, you know, who the Bulls were and learn about the organization and want to come play with us, especially now that we've got the new GM and new hiring and new executives in place? Or do you think that because Michael Reinsdorf is still there and we've seen kind of some of his true colors, that maybe some of the players will be hesitant to want to come to Chicago, just knowing his history with not wanting to pay guys as much as maybe they deserve and things like that? Anyways, let me know. Look forward to hearing your response. Take care. Bye.
Matt, this is a really good question and something that I hadn't thought about, at least extensively. One thing that that kind of sparked my thought process on this is, think about all the players that are maybe my age or even younger, 5 years younger than I am, are in their 20s or early teens, and all the people that maybe didn't understand the passion that the Bulls fan base has unless you were drafted here or you played here early on in your career. I think this is going to give people a window into the idea of how insane Bulls fans are from a national perspective, instead of just laughing at our front office and the terrible trades we make or the blown out by 35 or 56 against the Celtics. This is going to give players and also I think other fan bases the idea that there's still a lot of really passionate Bulls fans out there, and this fan base is massive. So hopefully maybe it has a good impact on players playing right now in the league and saying, damn, maybe I should check out Chicago with all the moves that they're making.
Yeah. And to clarify, our caller just there left us a follow up text saying he meant to say Jerry Reinsdorf when he said Michael Reinsdorf, obviously, as far as the guy who's been running this show a long time. And the figurehead who maybe has some issues about whether or not, you know, players would want to play for him. And on a related note, somebody else texted us from the 773. Jerry Reinsdorf doesn't get the blame because players always talk about how great he is as a person. At the end of the day, he got Chicago 7 championships. His biggest flaw is his loyalty to players and staff. First of all, I would take the word players right out of there. His biggest flaw is his loyalty to staff, not players. The Bulls, for several decades, have shown a track record to not be loyal to players, but to staff, not both. I am trying to think optimistically, as our caller suggested, about what this documentary and seeing the glory days can do for younger players in the NBA who, as you said, and just like younger fans, don't remember it, don't have any personal connection to it or attachment to it, no memory of it, only hear the stories and know the folklore. And, you know, take a player like Zach LaVine, the face of this franchise right now, who's what, 25 years old, 26 years old, and doesn't remember, you know. I think that there there is something to be said for that. And it goes along with some of the first words we heard from Mark Eversley, you know, last Friday when he did that, you know, video press conference about wanting to make the Bulls brand cool again. And certainly this documentary, I think, is going a long way to hopefully achieving that. But it all comes down to that versus players wanting to play for this ownership group, which I still worry about. Because, as I said, there's a long track record of Jerry and Michael being loyal to their staff and not showing that same level of loyalty to their players, including taking Jerry Krause over Michael Jordan, taking Jerry Krause over Scottie Pippen, and even recently, you know, picking Fred Hoiberg over Jimmy Butler, things of that nature. The way that they unceremoniously just, you know, trade players away, let them walk. They, you know, they throw their players under the bus a lot, even in this rebuild when they've been underperforming, and Jim is there on the post-game podium throwing his players under the bus when he's making head-scratching coaching decisions every night, and the Bulls stand behind Jim Boylan instead of standing behind their players. There are decades of pieces of evidence of this ownership group not being loyal to players, but being loyal to their staff instead. And that is still a concern to me, because as you're watching this documentary, yes, you're seeing all of the awesomeness of how cool the Bulls were. The Bulls owned the 90s, and not just in Chicago, not just in the US of A, the world. They were a global popular brand because of MJ and that team. But in this documentary, you're also getting all that nitty gritty behind the scenes stuff of, yeah, this relationship between this player and this executive wasn't great, and this player and this executive, and this happened and this happened, and all this turmoil and all that time. You know, and we've heard from Jerry Reinsdorf a couple of times in this documentary, but mostly what we're seeing is what we've always come to believe about Jerry Reinsdorf is he is a hands-off owner, and how much of this could he have fixed if he just stepped in and put his loyalty behind the right people?
I'm not going to dispute you on that. You're right.
Gar being gone is a good first step to repairing this team's and this organization's image as far as making it a desirable place to play. And you're right. It is a great fan base. And I don't know how much that goes. I don't know how far that goes when teams are, or when players are weighing their free agency decisions. I'm not trying to sell the fan base short. I'm just saying when it comes to players, you know, money, location, players that they get to play with, all those things I think matter a lot more than how great the fan base is. Sorry to say. So to me, there are good things and bad things about this documentary right now as far as whether or not it makes players want to play here.
That's the growth plate.
I'm with you. I think the idea too that I guess Jerry was only loyal to his staff, I don't think is necessarily fair. It would depend on the player, right? Think about all the players he's been very loyal to, Tony Kukoc being one of them, even after his playing career. Tony Kukoc has been with this franchise for, what, 30 years? 25 years? In some capacity, one way or the other. So Jerry is very loyal to certain players, I would say, too, and maybe it is the connection of bringing them up since day one and being a part of this organization since day one. I think about the connection he still has with Derrick Rose, and once Derrick Rose retires, I would not be surprised at all if Derrick Rose became an ambassador for the Bulls. I would not be surprised whatsoever if that happened. There are still great relationships Jerry has with other players, but you're right, the ones that he's kind of soured on, I think have left kind of a weird impact on this fan base and left us asking and wondering if it's going to be similar now in present day. The one thing we've been screaming out for the longest time was change in owner or change in management, first and foremost, and they finally made that decision. So I'm with you, Matt. I'm trying to be a little bit more optimistic now that says they're going to make those other changes that are needed and necessary in order to bring the excitement back to the Bulls in terms of a player's perspective. Because the fans' perspective, Matt, the Bulls' image is still cool. The Bulls' branding is still cool. I would guarantee they're probably still top five in selling merchandise across the world. I guarantee it. The Bulls merch and the Bulls logo and the Bulls brand is still dope. It's just about expanding on that. when you have better players on the floor and you have a team that's actually willing to compete, the brand skyrockets. So they have a unique opportunity here to bring all of this back, and it's being kickstarted by the reminiscence of 25 years ago when the franchise was at its all-time greatest. So maybe this is not only a kickstart for the fan base and kickstart for players to realize how great this franchise is, but maybe it's also a reflection on some of the people that are still there from the 90s and the early 2000s and being like, you know what, maybe this is our opportunity to change things and change things for the good. And I'm crossing my fingers and hoping that that's the case.
I certainly hope so. And like you said, trying to think positively and optimistically that AK and Eversley can make the right moves to repair the damage that's been done to this image. Because we all know, you know, and All-Star Weekend was a big magnifying glass on it, that right now the Bulls image across the league was bad. Like, irrelevant, dysfunctional, insignificant. I mean, the third largest market team in the league, and we had one nationally televised game this past season.
Yikes.
They got a long way to go to fix that label. But I'm feeling optimistic that they're up to the task.
We did an extensive search. I kind of led the search.
Let's take one more voicemail before we get out of here, Matt. Again, 331-979-1369. If you want to be a part of the conversation, drop your texts, your voicemails, anything you got for us. Let's hear one more voicemail before we get out of here.
Hey, guys. Love the show. I have a thought and a question. So my thought was just you guys had highlighted how ridiculous it is that they only had one guy on the player development staff. It's just a testament to Jimmy Butler in particular, but Joakim Noah, Taj Gibson, I know a lot of that probably came from Thibodeau, but just a testament to those guys, I think especially Jimmy. And then my question was about Neil Funk. I think this year was supposed to be his last year, and I'm just wondering if you know if they're going to do anything special for him, and if you've heard of anybody who might be filling in his place. I know Jason Benetti does a great job, but I'm pretty sure he's a White Sox lifer. So, love to hear your thoughts. Thanks, guys.
Awesome. Another really great question that we haven't touched on, Matt. Let's start with the beginning part of it, though. The idea that we still didn't talk about this enough. The idea that this happened.
I was surprised to find that, you know, there was one player development coach on the staff.
And I don't know if that goes back as far as Tibbs being here and Jimmy being here, but I mean, damn, it could very well go back that far. But you're right. It's a testament to any players that have been here recently that have gone on and all of a sudden increased not only their outlook on their careers, but also increase their worth across the league. So I don't know. I'm just glad that Eversley's here and he's going to fix that problem. And that's something that he thought it was worthy enough to mention in his first words as the Bulls' new GM.
Yeah. And I mean, this goes back to our first caller and our conversation about Lowry. And it's not just Lowry. It's like Bulls fans being frustrated all season long is we have this young team, second youngest team in the league this past season, and we keep hearing about, it's a growth plate. We're laying a foundation. We're developing these young players. And we're sitting there watching the games saying, man, y'all ain't developing shit. These young players are not getting better. They're getting worse. So, you know, it was very gratifying in a, like, thank God somebody of significance is actually calling them out on this instead of just fans calling them out on it, because it's not just Lowry. Like, Wendell didn't get any better this year. No, who did? Who can you say got better this year? Maybe Zach, but, you know, Zach had a pretty strong season last year, too. My hope to God is that not only did Michael Reinsdorf open the pocketbooks to hire AK and Eversley, who did not come cheap, but they will keep that wallet open and allow them to actually fill out the staff in the way that these new voices tell them is necessary. The Bulls finally admitted to themselves they didn't know what the fuck they were doing. So if you're ready to hand over your organization to people who do know what the fuck they're doing, let them do their jobs and let them hire the people that they want to hire. quality, quantity, whomever they deem to be the right person for the job. And, you know, on that note, we did get the official welcome from the Bulls yesterday to Pat Connolly and J.J. Polk joining as, you know, VP of player development and assistant GM, respectively. So that more of that is happening. And my hope is that more of that will continue to happen. And it's like, hey, Connolly, who else do you need on your staff to make player development a real focus here? Because that was the one truly unforgivable, incompetent thing that this Bulls team had done, even just over the last few years of a rebuild. You have the youngest team in the league, or damn near close to it, and you have one point person on your staff whose primary focus is developing that young talent. It's inexcusably stupid that that is what was going on. So just like repairing the brand, Bulls fans should be thinking optimistically that that's something else that this new regime can fix.
It's a learning moment, and we'll learn from it.
The last thought on Neil Funk, I hope something happens. I hope he stays healthy enough to the point where once we do get games back and actually be able to kind of bring things back to somewhat of a normal semblance of what we're used to, that they'll do something. And I'm sure they will for Neil Funk. I know this was supposed to be his last year, but maybe like Hawk Harrelson's send off they did, they'll allow him to come back and maybe do like a last three games of a home series or something like that next season, or once they finish this season out, whatever the case may be. I'm sure the Bulls will do right, and I'm sure NBC Sports Chicago is going to do right by Neil Funk too. And he deserves it, man. He's been, him and Stacy were really the voices of my Bulls childhood for the longest time. So those two guys I remember growing up, and those, some of the best games I've ever watched were commentated by Neil Funk and Stacy King. So I'm sure whenever it is that they're going to give him his final game, that there's going to be an appropriate send-off. But the question is who would you like to see fill in there? I know he dropped a couple of names, and we've heard some other people do games with Stacy over the last 2 years. Any names that you would like to see be a part of the broadcast permanently?
Yeah, well, so first, real quick, I think that the Bulls will do right by Neil and send him off in style. I know that they had something planned for the Bulls' final home game of the season. Assuming the Bulls are done and will not come back to play any regular season games, I think, you know, something that would make sense is honoring him and letting him do the first, like the home opener of next season, whenever that is, and having and sending him off that way, which would be great. As far as his replacement, we got a lot of variety this past season as far as those filling in for him on road games. I agree that I think Bonetti, as great as he is calling NBA games, is not likely because of his primetime job of White Sox play-by-play. That's a big job. And he also likes to dabble in other stuff as well, including some college athletics. The name that I keep hearing is the most likely successor is Adam Amin, who, you know, is a Chicago product dude who was, you know, a producer at ESPN 1000 for a while. He's gone on to have a very rapid rise in sports broadcasting. Currently, you know, with ESPN, does a great job calling a variety of games. He was big in, Women's March Madness the last couple of years. The guy does everything, and he is, by all accounts, and, you know, you and I have had him on this show before, a great guy who deserves all success he's had at such a young age. And I wonder if he is willing to leave ESPN and that national spotlight to come back to Chicago and do a local show, like being the Bulls play-by-play guy. But I think it's a possibility. Well, what I'm hearing is if the Bulls had their choice, it would be him. And what I have heard is that he's open to it. So, I'm not reporting anything there, nothing official, but that is the name that I'm hearing most frequently as most likely to succeed Neil Funk, which would be great because I personally think Adam Amin is awesome calling basketball games.
Oh, my goodness. I also like the, I brought her name up to last year when we were talking about all the broadcasters, but Lisa Byington, if she doesn't get the Bulls job, she deserves an opportunity in another market. Matt, her chemistry with Stacey King over the last 2 years, and she only did, really I think, good. About 5 or 6 games. Man, she was able to pull stories out of Stacey King just casually, nonchalant. The Bulls could be getting smacked around by 35, but Stacey King is there giggling and laughing and telling funny stories. Like, if the Bulls are going to get their heads kicked in, that's what I want to hear. And you're right about Adam Amin, true professional. We had him on the show, too. It's going to be about a year and a half. I think it was the start of the Bulls' second year in the rebuild where they decided to do all of this. Around October time, we had Adam Amin on. That was a good interview, too. So if you guys want to go check that out, it's still there. But also, too, and I don't know if he's got any interest in doing it. I know he's doing the Windy City Bulls stuff, but Marcinowski, man. Marcinowski is one of our favorites. I know he's one of your favorites, too. You got a chance to work with him at NBC Sports Chicago. But great guy, and I think he does a great job on the broadcasts, too. So, but Lisa Byington, if she does not get the Bulls job, definitely deserves a shot somewhere else.
Absolutely. You know, I think the Bulls have plenty of great candidates to choose from. And it's big shoes to fill. You know, you were talking a minute ago about Neil Funk and growing up a Bulls fan, listening to him. And, you know, it even goes back to my childhood, man. You know, I know that there's an age gap between you and me, but like some of the most iconic moments of Bulls history are Neil Funk on the local broadcast, because you know everybody remembers like the national broadcast of Utah 98 game 6 where MJ swats the ball away from Karl Malone and Bob Costas is setting the scene as MJ's bringing the ball up, and it's, you know, we're a few seconds from game 7 or from the Bulls 6 championship and perhaps, you know, the last MJ shot and all that stuff. But, you know, more than that, I remember Neil Funk's call of that moment where, you know, Jordan, a drive, hangs, fires. It's good. Bulls lead 87-86. Like that, those words spoken by Neil Funk defined the culmination of my Bulls childhood fandom. So they are humongous shoes to fill. And I do not envy the person who has to follow Neil Funk, but, now, hopefully they just pick somebody who has quality chemistry with Stacey, as you pointed out. And, you know, it's a great job. And now it's an even more enticing job because, you know, hopefully it will be more fun basketball to call than what Neil and Stacey have had to call for the last 3 years.
Very, very true. And then as far as Jason Benetti goes, yeah, you're right. I think he's doing... There's too many jobs out there that he does now to be able to fill in for a full season with the Bulls, just the crossover with the White Sox. And then also, too, in the fall, man, he does a ton of college basketball and a ton of college football, too. I mean, there was a video that he shot maybe a couple of years ago where he did 48 or 24 hours. He did a Sox game, got on a plane, went and did a Tennessee game, and then got on a plane and did the Sox game again that night. Talk about a busy dude. And Bill Walton likes to call him. I heard Bill Walton talking yesterday, and Bill Walton likes to call him Maui Jim Beach Boy. So, yeah, I guess he's got his plate way too full. So he would be fantastic as well, but. Regardless, like you said, anybody who comes around that's going to fill the position of Neil Funk, they've got huge, huge shoes to fill. And I'll also leave you with this. It's probably one of my favorite Neil Funk calls, and it's just a one-off, Matt, and it's hilarious. I forgot about this call.
There's Clarkson. Stop, go, spin, back to Nwaba for three. Ooh. Oh, my goodness. I want to kill somebody.
It's David Nwaba absolutely bricking a three. It was like a grenade launcher off the backboard. Neil Funk just goes, oh, that would have killed somebody. So
that's some of our favorite moments in Outsiders for the past two seasons are laughing our asses off when the Bulls opponent, whoever it is, you know, somebody chucks up a brick from range and Neil goes, oh, that's a terrible shot.
It's like Hawk Harrelson in the last few years. Like, Hawk would just say whatever he wanted. He just, because the Sox were so bad, too, and it was just like, whatever, no filter. So at times, I felt like Stacey and Neil were like that, too, which deservedly so. But thanks for everybody for these questions, text messages, voicemails. These were really good this week. A lot of things that we haven't talked about. But if you want to be a part of the conversation, 331-979-1369, the place to do that. Thanks to Built Bar for sponsoring today's episode and every episode in the month of May. Use the promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off your first order at BuiltBar.com. That's BuiltBar.com. Use the promo code LOCKEDON. And if you do decide to order something, tweet at us at LOCKEDONBulls. We'd love to see the feedback and get your guys' thoughts on Built Bar as well. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley, Bulls Nation. Have a wonderful day. Be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
There's Clarkson. Stop, go, spin. Back to Nwaba for three. Oh, my goodness. That would have killed somebody.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com